So, how's everyone today? Everyone well? Yes, that's good. So, what are you doing here?
Staying well.
We only want people who are suffering here. If you're already happy, don't waste our time. Okay, so we're going to do some meditation, and I think everyone here has done a little bit of meditation. Meditation is very kind of mainstream these days. I just saw today, but there was a news article a little while ago saying that Bill Clinton's now taking up meditation. Yeah, so that's good. So then when Hillary gets into the White House, that means that our plans for world domination will be nearly complete. So this is where we're at, and we've reached a place in our I think a global culture where we realise that actually meditation is not just a exotic spiritual practice, but it's something for everyone. And I think everybody has a spiritual side or a spiritual dimension, whatever we mean by that. But certainly everybody has a mind, at least. Right? That's right, isn't it? I think so, pretty much, yeah. Okay. And so we all have minds, so we all should take care of them. And that's all that meditation is. It just means taking care of your mind. So we know that if you, if you don't take care of your body, if you eat all the wrong things and don't do any exercise and so on, well, you know, your body will fall apart. That's what happens. It's just cause and effect. Same thing with your mind. If you don't take care of your mind, you don't look after it, then it gradually will just sort of fall apart. So this is what we do. We try to look after our own minds. So for what I'm going to do this evening is I'm going to talk about meditation for a little bit, and then from, I think, from 7:30 we'll do a guided meditation for half an hour, and then a bit of a chance for a bit more of a Dhamma talk and so on. But one of the topics that I was asked to talk about this evening was the topic of what we call in Buddhism Vedana, or feeling. So I might talk about that a little bit in the context of meditation to begin with, before moving on to do the actual guided meditation itself. So feeling. So this is something which, as an Australian man, I can't speak on from experience, okay? Because you know that we don't have feelings, don't you? That's part of it's like a rite of masculinity. You sort of have to shut them all down. Yeah. At least that's what we think sometimes. Yeah. In Buddhism, so feeling is extremely important in Buddhism to such an extent that the words for feeling and the words for meditation are often almost the same, okay? And the words for feeling and the words for meditation and also the words for pleasure are often almost the same, okay? And so we can, in certain contexts in Buddhist scriptures, they actually just use the word pleasure where they're talking about meditation. Okay? That's how closely linked these things are. So, what is going on here and how does this all work? Well, first thing to understand is that in Buddhism, the idea of what we're talking about when we talk about feelings, we're talking about something which is simpler and more fundamental than perhaps what we normally mean when we talk about feelings. Okay? So normally we think of feelings, you know, you have feelings of, liking and disliking, or anger, or feelings of ambiguity, or whatever. Different, well, we have kind of complex feelings and so on. But what the word feeling or Vedana means in Buddhism really is just whether something is pleasurable, painful, or neutral. Okay, so it's just a very simple thing. It's very basic, it's very primal, okay? So feeling is something that we share in common with the animals, okay? These are kind of basic motivations, right? You can see the animals. It's something that they like, they go for food, and they go for it. Yeah, something that they don't like, they'll run the other direction. Yeah? And so this is kind of basic motivator for action. Now, when we think about like that, then you realize that much as we would like to think that we're much more sophisticated than that, we've evolved since that, but actually the reality is that most of our lives are pretty much like that, right? Pretty much we're like a dog running after a bone, right? Anything we can get to make us happy, so we can have a bit of pleasure, we'll run after it, and anything that we have that's going to make us feel painful, then we're going to run away from it. Yeah? And the kinds of pleasures and pains that we have might be a bit more discerning or a bit more sophisticated, but basically it's pretty much the same kind of thing. So this is how the mind works, not just the human mind works, animal minds and so on all work the same way. We have this kind of mechanism, very fundamental mechanism, that we're drawn towards things that are pleasurable. And we are turned away and repulsed from things that are painful. Okay? As well as those two, of course, there's always neutral feeling. Right? Feeling which is kind of somehow in the middle, and that we're not particularly attracted to or particularly repelled from, but we don't really care about. And the Buddha made an interesting kind of correlation. He said that the pleasant feeling, pleasure, is something which is usually associated with greed, right? When you feel something pleasant, you want more of it. Painful feeling is usually associated with aversion and hatred, right? So you feel pain, you want to get rid of it. Yeah, and so we know that. If you feel like uncomfortable, your body is, you've got discomfort, or you feel sick or something, you tend to be grumpy and stroppy and snap at people, right? So painful feelings associated with anger. And neutral feeling tends to be associated with delusion or stupidity, right? You don't care. You don't pay attention. You don't know, right? So think about how that is for you right now as you're sitting in the chair. You're sitting right here, maybe you feel some painful feelings, might be maybe some itch or something, discomfort in your body or something like that. But most of your body is actually kind of neutral most of the time, okay? So how does your left earlobe feel right now? Okay? Before I mentioned that, you probably weren't thinking about it, okay? Yeah, so, but there it is. And if you pay attention to it, you can say, oh, okay, there's a bit of a sensation there. I can actually feel something, but you're not really feeling much about it. You don't really care until someone pinches it or something like that. And then, well, maybe if you've got heavy earrings or something coming off it, there might be some sensations there. But most of the time, there's nothing much there. So, neutral feeling is associated with delusion. Our minds tend to turn off. Okay? Now that analysis, that way of looking at feelings, is very, very useful when it comes to meditation. Okay? It's giving us a guidance of how we use the feelings in our meditation. Okay? If we have a lot of painful feeling in our meditation, what's going to happen? Right? You're going to feel aversion. You're going to not like it. Yuck. Meditation equals pain. Right? And if you sit there and meditate with lots of pain all the time, you're creating a conditioning in your mind. Meditation equals pain, meditation equals pain, meditation equals pain. And the more you do that, the less likely you are to want to sit meditation the next time. Right? And what happens is that sometimes when you're meditating, that you can overcome that feeling of pain. Right? And that's actually a good thing, right? So you can be sitting there meditating and maybe you have a pain in your back or a pain in your knee or something, and you keep on meditating and you're mindful of it. And that, amazing, goes away. And you realize that really strong, painful feeling was there for a while and now it's gone. And you realize how powerful your mind is, that you can just sit there and meditate and the painful feeling goes away, okay? That's actually a really good thing, and it's a really nice thing. But what you don't notice is that in the back of your mind, there's already an attachment creeping into that. Because you're the one who can meditate and get command of your pain. Right? I'm the one who can meditate and make my pain go away. And the next time you meditate, the painful feeling comes, and subtly in the back of your mind, then you're thinking, oh yeah, I'll be able to make that go away. And the attachment is there. But of course, the reason why the pain went away was because you let go. and now you're holding on, and so it doesn't go away. Yeah? Or maybe it does, and this thing's, it's complicated. It goes around and around in different cycles. But the main point there is that you end up in your meditation struggling with those painful feelings. Neutral feelings, right? And this is a lot of people in their meditation, they use a lot of neutral feelings. So they're sitting there and they don't feel very much at all. Mind feels very equanimous, right? It's very kind of quite a bland feeling, not much either pleasant or painful, maybe a bit relaxing or something like that. But what tends to happen, that's fine, nothing wrong with that, but what tends to happen is that your mind switches off. Right? Your mindfulness doesn't become very sharp. Your mind doesn't go very deep into the meditation. Okay? That neutral feeling tends to lead to delusion. Right? That's just how it is. So this is why the Buddha said that the best kind of feeling to experience and to deepen your meditation is the pleasant feeling, okay? The feeling of pleasure, of happiness, of joy. And when the Buddha was talking about meditation, these are the feelings that he talked about again and again and again and again and again. Every time he talked about meditation, that's how it happens. It happens through the experience of joy. When the mind is happy, then you're drawn into the meditation. You want to be there. You look forward to it. You're excited about going and sitting meditation, right? You want to sit, and you when you sit and meditate, it's just like sitting in your most relaxed, comfy chair. And you go, that's so nice. I can sit there and meditate and just be happy. And that's an incredibly powerful thing to be able to do. To be able to find happiness just by sitting still. Right? All of the things that people do to find happiness, right? The real secret of happiness is if you can just sit still and be happy. That is just so powerful. Can we sit still and be happy? Now, to be able to do that is simply it's a training. That's all. There's no tricks to it. There's nothing magical. It's not something that some people can do and other people can't. Everybody can do it. But we have to just learn, and we have to play around, and we have to practice, and we have to get used to the idea. Gradually we learn it, and then we realize, actually, it's very easy. It's the simplest thing in the world. We sit down, we let go, we go into that meditation place which is so peaceful and happy, and we just feel happy. And anybody can do it. And so this is what draws your mind inwards. This is what enables you to let go of all of your suffering. And even though you may have experienced stresses and difficulties and anxieties and all of these kinds of things, but none of them are there in that happy place in your mind. They're just not there. So, we learn to let go of everything, and we learn to turn inwards, and we learn to just be with that meditation. Now, there are many different techniques and many different ways that we can learn to do that, and I'll just teach one meditation method for this evening. And so I'm going to put it up for a vote. So you're going to choose which meditation that you're going to do for this evening. Okay? Okay, so who wants to do... we're going to have breath meditation. We're going to have loving-kindness meditation. And we're going to have one more. What's another meditation that we can do? Anyone got any suggestions?
Clarity.
Sorry?
Clarity.
Clarity. Meditation on clarity. Ooh, I'm not sure. Not sure about that. Clarity is great for meditation. I don't know if we can do a meditation on clarity.
Loving.
That's already in there. Number two. We can do that. We can do that twice if you like.
Sorry, I'm not with it.
We're thinking of the third one.
But then that will split the vote.
Yeah.
Body scanning.
In my head.
Body scanning. Okay, so we can do body scanning and look for feelings in your body if you want. Okay, so body scanning. Okay, so there's three meditations: breath meditation, loving kindness meditation, and body scanning meditation. Who wants to do breath meditation? Okay, fairly popular. Okay, very good. Who wants to do loving kindness? You can only vote for one. Oh, very popular. Who wants to do body scanning? Pinder suggested it, and he didn't even want to. He's a traitor to the cause. You guys need to see him afterwards. He's a splitter. Okay, so we're going to do some loving kindness for today, so no problems. That's just democracy in action. So I'll say a few words about loving kindness meditation before we do the guided meditation this evening. Okay, so loving kindness is a quality of heart, it's an emotion. Actually, loving kindness is one of the best ways of developing the feeling of happiness in your meditation. The Buddha himself said that if you do do loving kindness meditation, then it will lead to your mind becoming very happy very quickly. So what we're doing, loving kindness is it's a very simple and very childlike emotion. Okay. The great example, we just did the Metta Sutta, so this is all about loving kindness, right? And the loving kindness Sutta, then the Buddha said, just like the love of a mother for her only child. Yeah, that's the kind of love that we're looking for. It's not complicated, okay? We don't want any sick and twisted love-hate relationship things here, okay? You can go and sort those things out some other time, all right? We just want simple, right? Simple, pure, right? Just that love, just that holding and that cherishing. And with that feeling of loving kindness, we have something that can manifest in a very physical way. We actually feel it inside our bodies. This is crucial in developing the meditation. It's not just something which becomes a vague emotion or a vague feeling, but it's something that you actually experience as a sensation inside your own body. And when you experience it as a sensation inside your own body, you can learn to hold on to it, to keep it there, to develop it, to deepen it, and to sustain it. And that way, that feeling of loving kindness becomes something which is not fleeting, right? It's not rare. It's not like a butterfly. Remember that song, Love is Like a Butterfly? Right? It's not like that. Why should love be like a butterfly? Right? Love should be like an ocean. Yeah, you should just be able to go in for a swim whenever you want. Yeah, this is what the Buddha said. He said, develop this heart of loving kindness like the great ocean, not like a butterfly. Yeah, so you should be able to go for a swim whenever you like. So if you learn this metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, you can sit down and it's like you become aware that this feeling of loving kindness, it's part of you already. It's part of who you've always been, but you just haven't paid attention. You just haven't admitted it to yourself. So this is why we begin the loving kindness meditation by doing loving kindness for ourselves. If we can't love ourselves, then, well, life is kind of sad, really. So we begin doing loving kindness for ourselves, and because we just have there's actually quite a lot of different stages and so on. There's a long way we can take this meditation. It's actually a very profound meditation. But for this evening, we just have a short period. So we're going to do loving kindness for oneself, and we're going to do loving kindness for a loved person. So I want each of you, before we begin, to think of one loved person who we can develop loving kindness for. Okay, someone who you have a simple and uncomplicated love for. Okay, let's begin the meditation.
Thank you.
sitting quietly. Settle back inside your body. Comfortably into your body, feeling safe, relaxed, there's nothing to do, no one to impress, just be at peace. heart and say to yourself the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy, repeating those words again and again and again, evenly, steadily, clearly, making a firm foundation for your mind. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Not worrying about any doubts, not paying attention to any other thoughts or anything that comes in. Just don't worry about anything, just say those words to yourself, just keep on going. Other thoughts come in, the mind gets distracted, don't worry about it. It's not your problem. Just have metta, have loving kindness for all of those thoughts, all of those distractions, all of those other things. Don't try to push them away. Give them a hug. And keep coming back to those words. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And as you keep going, gradually you come to notice that there's something that goes along with those words that isn't words. When your mind is sincere and your mindfulness is engaged, then inside those words, inside your heart, there's a feeling of loving kindness. It's a gentle feeling, warm and joyful. taking that same loving kindness and spreading it to your loved person. Keeping the feeling of loving kindness soaking through your body. Gentle and warm. And just bringing the name of that loved person into the words of metta. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. Thank you. letting your mind settle with that pleasant feeling, the joyful feeling of loving kindness, drawing you in, soothing you, comforting you. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. Spreading that loving kindness to all the people in this room. May everyone in this room be happy. May everyone in this room be happy. May everyone in this room be happy. Letting your feeling of loving kindness spread out, fill up this whole room and all the people in it. coming near to the end of the meditation, back to our loved one. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. And then to oneself, may I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And letting the words of loving kindness go, letting the feeling fade away. Just letting the mind come back to a neutral space, empty, open and clear. Before we finish, just taking a minute to reflect back over the meditation, seeing what happened. How did your mind move? How did it change? What kinds of things were you thinking of? What did the loving kindness feel like? Did it feel like anything at all? Was there any pleasant feeling there? How did that draw your mind in? And finally, we can finish by dedicating the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize awakening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And you can open your eyes and come out of meditation. I might just talk a little bit more about Vedana, about feeling, and how it works in meditation. Are there any questions in the question box? No questions. Okay, fine. Anyway, we'll talk about that for a while and see if anybody this evening has any questions. Okay, so Vedana, feeling. I already talked about the three kinds of Vedana, the 53 kinds of feeling the Buddha talked about, pleasant, painful, and neutral feeling. Pleasant feeling draws you in, painful feeling pushes you away, neutral feeling couldn't care less. You turn off, you fall asleep. Now, you see, feeling, it has a bit of a problem, which I kind of alluded to in a slightly humorous fashion earlier, but is a genuine problem, and the problem is that feeling is a female thing. It's a woman's thing. Of course, it's not a woman's thing, right? But it's often felt to be a woman's thing, right? It's culturally constructed to be a female thing, right? Men are rational, and women are emotional. Yeah? Among the many lies which we tell ourselves and which our society constructs for us, this is one of the most persistent and most destructive, I think. And unfortunately, that particular bit of cultural mythology has had, and I think continues to have, an effect in how we approach meditation in Buddhism. Just to sort of backtrack and give a bit of history, if we look at the history of Western psychology, then in the early years of psychology, early 20th century, there was a bit of a kind of a distrust of feelings, right? And feelings was like you know, something you had to get under control, right? And you didn't want to be hysterical, and you wouldn't want to be overwhelmed by your feelings. And feelings were something which were opposed to reason, like reason was good and feelings are kind of bad. As time went on, people began to realize that's all kind of a bit silly and it's not actually how your mind works. But that idea, often unconsciously, seeped into how meditation was taught and has been taught, and I think still is taught in many ways in modern times. And a lot of meditation that you find is often quite disconnected from the idea of feelings. Like, it's quite dissociated from feelings. You don't want to feel anything. I remember my first meditation retreat, and I felt some like joy and happiness in my meditation. I told my meditation teacher, and they're like, "Oh, don't be scared, right? Be scared of pleasure, right? Especially pleasant feeling. If it's painful feeling, it's okay, right? Right?" But we can't trust pleasure. But neutral feeling is good, because neutral feeling is scientific, right? It's objective. Yeah? Of course, this is all very silly, but that's how this kind of these things are constructed socially. And so there I think has been a strong tendency in Buddhism, certainly in the sort of second half of the 20th century, to sort of develop a kind of meditation which kind of ignored or downplayed or avoided the role of pleasure in meditation. And I think that's a bit of a shame. Of course, most of you will have heard of the word mindfulness, right? We use the word mindfulness to talk about meditation. And mindfulness is a good word, and it's a good way to talk about meditation. But notice that mindfulness is also quite it's a kind of a neutral term, right? And sometimes mindfulness is, mindfulness is a bit kind of distant. It's a bit cool. It's a cool way of looking at things, right? In more recent years, Ajahn Brahm has started using the word kindfulness, right? So this is what he's introducing into it, this word kindfulness, right? So it's not just objectively looking at things and say, "Oh yes, you're here, you're there, this is a feeling, this is a thought," and so on. But having some kindness for what's going on in your own mind. And so that's that shift, that different kind of perspective, actually is kind of a radical difference. It's only a small thing, but it makes a radical difference in how you approach feelings. And, of the meditation teachers in the world, I think it was Ajahn Brahm who was one of the first, really, who started really making central the idea of meditation, of feelings in meditation, especially pleasure in meditation, and how important that was. So, we meditate. We experience these different kinds of feelings. Now, on the one hand, it doesn't really matter what those feelings are. And on the one hand, it's good to be a bit distant towards our feelings. It's good to be a bit objective towards them, right? We don't want to be overwhelmed by feelings, right? So it's not that that's bad. Actually, it's good. You sit there, you feel a pain come up, you can watch it for a while, the pain goes away. Hey, that's good, actually. It means you're not so trapped by the idea of pain next time it happens, okay? But if you do that all the time, if it becomes an extreme, right? If it becomes an extreme, then your meditation can become dry. I know some people have meditated for many years like this, 10 years or 20 years, and they come to me and they sometimes say, "Oh, I feel like my heart is like a desert. Like I've been letting go of pleasant feelings for so long that I can't feel joy anymore. They've forgotten how. They've become so good at being neutral that that's all that's left, right?" Okay. So it's not a question of one approach being right and one approach being wrong. It's a question of finding some balance, okay? Just finding some balance. And that the pleasant feelings that we have in meditation, ultimately are the most important in drawing your mind in and making your mind still. Now, in more recent years, in psychology, they've kind of abandoned that way of thinking about emotion, largely, it must be said, under Buddhist influence. And these days, in modern psychology, they tend to think of emotions and feelings tend to be treated very positively, and in terms of, they're regarded as being something which is integrative, okay? Integrative is a bit of a kind of psychobabble term, but what it means is that the feelings you have in your mind are what tend to affect your mind as a whole, right? They tend to affect your mind as a whole. So you think about that, right? Now, if you're let's say you're experiencing a painful feeling, okay? Then let's say you are going shopping and you've been out for a few hours and you made the mistake of wearing high heels and your feet are getting very sore, okay? And then you're starting to get a bit short-tempered and grumpy and all of those things. And the painful feeling then affects your mood then affects your thoughts affect your perceptions, and it goes kind of round and round and round and round, right? So you get into this negative cycle of things, right? So your whole mind is affected by that. The same thing with the feeling of pleasure. Maybe you're meeting your grandchildren for the first time in a year, and you're so happy to see them, and you know, give them a big hug and so on. You feel so happy, right? And you have that happy feeling and the happy thoughts and the happy emotions, and everything about you is happy, right? So this is what emotions tend to do. They tend to affect everything that's happening in your mind. Now, of course, that's not always the case, right? Because our emotions are not always coherent. Sometimes they're, in fact, very normally, they're actually conflicted and they're changing and they are fractured and they're contradictory, and we feel one thing and the other thing at the same time, right? And that's why, of course, we have this tension and we have these kind of problems, and that's why we come to meditation, to try to help with those problems. So when we meditate, we're emphasizing that integrative quality of the emotions, okay? We emphasize that. And so we emphasize a kind of feeling, a kind of pleasant feeling, which is going to encompass your whole mind, so that everything in your mind will feel pleasant, and your thoughts become pleasant, and your emotions become pleasant, and your perceptions become pleasant, and your memory becomes pleasant, and the feelings in your body become pleasant, and everything is pleasant, okay? That's the way that we're going towards, right, as we're going in meditation. It takes time, right? It doesn't happen immediately. It's not a trick, right? It's not just a magic technique that you can do, but it's just a training of the way that we develop perceptions in meditation, that you can learn little bit by little bit to move towards that sense of pleasure and happiness in your meditation. Okay? So, the most basic way that we do that, the most basic method, is by paying attention. Okay? By paying attention. How do we use our attention? Yeah? And think about how this works. Right? Maybe you're sitting at home and your neighbor's playing loud music again. Right? And you're getting really annoyed with them. Right? And it's kind of going on and on and on, and right? Oh, don't give me any peace, and this kind of thing. And then you start thinking about them more and more, over and over. They've got anything better to do with their time. You know, they're just sitting around. And you're thinking. Your thoughts go down that way, and it amplifies. Everything gets worse. Right? So this is really the problem, right? You're the one that's creating the suffering. The music isn't really a problem. Who cares? It's just a bit of sound. Right? But then you make it worse and worse and worse by going over it again and again and again in your mind. Okay? So this is why, that's the good news, okay? That's the good news. That's the good news because you can change how you use your mind, okay? You can't change what your neighbors are doing, necessarily. You can try yelling at them or whatever, but eventually, you can't change everything. You're still going to have unpleasant things and things that will happen. But you can change how you respond to it. You can always change that, okay? You can always change that. And there are so many cases of people who've been in terrible situations, right? I had a very good close friend of mine who in Sydney, who was sent to jail a number of years ago for a crime that never actually happened, much less the crime that he committed. And this fellow who went to jail was the most innocent and pure-hearted person that you've ever met in your life. He's like somebody who would have to, like, water down his chamomile tea. Right? And he would like never have said the word damn in his whole life, right? I mean, he was just like the most, you know, pure-minded, pure-hearted person. And there he gets sent to jail, right? And, you know, obviously you could feel very bitter and very wronged and all of these kinds of things. And, you know, I went to see him in jail, and I'm like, how is it? He said, oh, it's really good. My cellmate's a meditator as well. So we get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and do meditation together. So he was having a great time. I mean, okay, still being in jail was still a hassle, right? That wasn't fun. But he responded to it well, and he used his time well, and he learned a lot while he was there, and actually, I think, at the end, I think it was actually quite good for him. He learned a lot. So, wherever you are, there's always something that you can do. Right? There's always something you can do. And we can learn to find a sense of happiness in ourselves. And when we find that sense of happiness in ourselves, then we're not so... We don't get so caught up in other things. You can be more... Like, it doesn't mean that... And I think it's important to mention this. It doesn't mean that you don't care about what's going on around you. It doesn't mean that you don't try to change things, right? You still try to make things better. You still try to help people. You still care for all of those things, okay? But you're not going to be so despairing and distraught when it doesn't work. Okay? You're not going to be so caught up in it. You're not going to become so overwhelmed by the suffering of others. Because you know that whatever happens, that you can find happiness in yourself. Yeah? So, pleasant feeling. We find that through meditation, we find that through feedback. Right, through paying attention, and this is one of the great secrets of meditation, the things that you pay attention to tend to amplify. If you pay attention to unpleasant things, it creates the anger, the unpleasant thoughts, unpleasant perceptions, and so on and so forth, and it builds up. You pay attention to pleasant things, and the opposite happens. The more pleasure builds up. And we can do that in our lives and so on, but there's a big trick to it, right? The problem is that the pleasure that we get from external things is not very effective. It's very short term. I remember once when I was a young monk, I had a friend who was there in the monastery, and his mother was visiting one time, and mother took us out, and we went to this ice cream parlor, and she bought us ice cream sundaes. And this is like very exciting, okay, for a young monk in Thailand. This is probably the most exciting event all year, right, to have an ice cream sundae. So we got these ice cream sundaes and we ate them, and then my friend said, I know they're impermanent, but do they have to be that impermanent? Right? That's how it is. And you know, all of the psychological studies show on pleasure and happiness show exactly the same thing, right? That they show, and it's very simple, it's this, how happiness works. There are certain things that we need. We need a place to stay, we need enough food to eat, all of those kinds of things. And we need people, right? Friends and family and things like that. And if we're missing any of those things, then our happiness tends to go down very quickly, okay? They're the things that make us happy. On top of that, adding more things does very little to change your happiness, okay? If you've got enough to eat, right, then having more to eat or nicer food basically does almost nothing to increase your happiness, right? If you've got a house which keeps the rain off and keeps the bugs away and all of those basic things, getting a bigger and nicer house does almost nothing to increase your happiness, okay? And this has been a very robust finding, replicated many, many times in different kinds of studies, right? So those kinds of happiness, simply having more pleasant sensations, is not something which is going to lead us to being more happy. It's as simple as that. It just doesn't work, okay? But what we do in our meditation can lead to you being more happy, okay? It does not have any cholesterol. There is no added GM, okay? You're not going to be taxed on it, okay? You can just sit there and meditate. Turn inside, you pay attention to those peaceful feelings in meditation, the peaceful, happy feelings in meditation, and that makes you feel more peaceful and content. And you know what? you know, one of the great secrets of it is that when you feel happy and content, you can go and you can enjoy any of the things that you enjoyed before, and they taste even better, right? Chocolate is chocolatier. The sky is bluer, right? When you see your friends again, you love them even more. Everything in your life becomes better and brighter and more vivid and more real. Right? At the same time, you're also less attached to them. You know, you eat that bar of chocolate and you're like, oh, that's really, you can taste the chocolate so much more clearly and it's more delicious than it was before. But at the same time, if you don't have it, it's okay. Right? That's how life becomes when you're meditating, when you have that happiness in your meditation. So all of those things which we're looking for, which we try to get to give us pleasure, then, you know, you realize that they're just kind of optional extras, you know. They're okay, it's nice to have them, but they're not that important. You know, it's nice to have a nice meal, it's nice to, whatever, drive a nice car or something like that, but at the end of the day, it's not all that important. Right? And you can be, it's the real test, how can you be happy if you can be without any of those things and still be happy? Yeah, that's the real test. What would actually happen? Yeah? So this is what we do in the monastic life, is that we take time to go on retreats and just be by ourselves. Yeah? And I'm actually planning a retreat at the moment. I'm planning to go away for 18 months and just be by myself for 18 months. And I'm like, woohoo! It'll be so wonderful to just be by myself for 18 months. So happy. I don't have to see any of you lot for 18 months. Right? And I've done this before. I know what it's like, you know, and it feels so happy and so content. So then when the 18 months is over, then I'll be packing my bags and thinking, fantastic, I get to go back to Armidale again. Right? And so that's what it means to be happy inside, to be content inside. It means everything is okay. Right? So this is what we do in the meditation. You practice, you find that place of peace and happiness inside yourself. And the more you can find that place, the more you can hold that and keep that close and be with that, the more it will grow. That's the big secret in meditation, that's all. If you pay attention to it, you watch it, the more you pay attention, the more it grows. The more it grows, the easier it is for you to pay attention to it. Right? And it goes on, and that's that cycle. So it takes some patience, right? Don't be in a rush, okay? Don't be disappointed. Don't compare yourself with anybody else. Don't have any expectations. Just be patient and you just do it. You just sit there, you be at ease, you be relaxed, and then learn little bit by little bit to find that peace inside yourself. And the real peace, the peace that's meaningful, is something that will sneak up on you when you least expect it. Right? It's not something that hits you over the head and says, wow, this is so peaceful. Right? It's something you're just meditating, you don't even notice it. And then one day you look and you think, wow, it really is peaceful. And then you realize, that's what those monks were talking about, right? Anyway, so my talk for you this evening a little bit on Vedana and feelings in Buddhism. So before we finish, anyone have any questions or comments? Yeah.
Thank you very much for the talk.
No worries.
I read somewhere that the Vedana some way controls the attentional field, and that attention goes to pleasant and doesn't go to unpleasant.
Tends to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in my experience, my attention can quite easily go to unpleasant.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, just reading that, or hearing it, or whatever, it didn't make sense in terms of my subjective experience.
Sure, yeah.
That unpleasant things can be just as attractive.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, it tends to be like that. Unpleasant feeling. I mean, it's kind of weird. Unpleasant feeling in some ways is. It makes sense in terms of, for me, it makes sense if you think of it in terms of evolution. Okay, right. So you think of it in terms of evolution. You know, you've got your basic evolutionary situation. Okay, here you are. You're a caveman sitting by the fire in the evening. There's a rustle in the bushes. Okay. Now, you've got two options. One, it's a deer. Two, it's a tiger. All right? Number one, you have dinner. Number two, you are dinner. Yeah? All right? That's it, right? And the key thing from an evolutionary point of view is that you can miss a dinner and still be okay. Right? You can let one deer escape, or two or three deer escape, and it's okay. But you can't miss one tiger, yeah, right? So often we're kind of more highly tuned to often to notice those negative things, right? I think it's like a survival thing, right? So you notice it. It's an emergency. That's how life is, isn't it, right? So, you know, if your house is burning down, right, or if there's a possibility of an accident or a possibility of sickness or something like that, you have to pay attention to those negative things, and so we're highly attuned to pay attention to them. So it's not that your mind doesn't doesn't pay attention to them. It does, to painful feelings. The real one you don't pretend to pay attention to is the neutral feelings. Right? That's when you tend to drift off and not pay any attention. So we sort of have this weird relationship with painful feelings where it hurts and we keep on paying attention to it anyway. Yeah? And we're kind of driven back and back and back and back to go over it even when it's long outlived any usefulness. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It does tend to do that, but it's not simple. Yeah, it's not a simple thing. Yeah. It tends to be I think it's probably a better way of thinking about it is any kind of feeling, pleasant and painful feeling, tends to attract attention. Yeah, they're basically they're like red flags, and they'll attract attention. But pleasant feeling attracts attention especially the meditative pleasant feelings, they attract attention in a way that tends to stay there, tends to be still. Whereas painful feelings tend to attract attention in a way which is very agitated. Right? You can't be still with it. You keep on kind of worrying at it. You don't just stay. You're not just content to just be with it. You have to sort of keep working it and thinking about it and so on.